Ahoy, authors! You're listening to the Writership Podcast, a show focused on helping indie authors master self-editing skills. So come aboard and get ready to find the treasure in your manuscript with hosts Leslie Watts and Clark Chamberlain.
Welcome to episode 99 of the Writership Podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about revealing character. I'm Leslie Watts, here with Clark Chamberlain from The Book Editor Show. To learn more about the podcast, visit writership.com/podcast.
As you know, the Writership Podcast is brought to you by the good folks at Author Marketing Club, home of the new and improved Amazon Reviewer Grabber tool. You know you need high-quality reviews for your books, so you should use the AMC Reviewer Grabber tool to quickly and easily locate reviewers that are ready, willing, and able to review your books for you. Become a premium member of AMC now by visiting www.authormarketingclub.com and get instant access to this tool and much more.
Hey, Clark.
Hey, episode 99. That means the next one would be 100.
Yeah.
If my math skills serve correct.
Right. Yep. Seems right to me. Yes. And so as part of the 100th episode, you and I are going to answer some questions. Mm-hmm. So if you out there have a burning question about editing or storytelling that you want to ask, you can send that along if you visit writership.com/ask.
And yes, it's I'm excited to dig into those questions. So
yes, me too. Fun. Kind of been collecting them and getting excited about talking about them.
Mm-hmm. So how's everything else going?
Oh, doing you well? Know, it's 2017. The year of strife and challenge, apparently. Mm-hmm. but we're making it. We're still standing.
Yes. Yeah. That's, you know, waking up on the right side of the ground every day. That's all you can ask for. So,
right.
But actually, so when this will air, I believe it'll be at the Smarter Artist Summit. I'll be there and you'll be there.
Yes.
Is that
yes,
right?
Yes, I believe so.
That'll be fun. Excited for that.
Yes, we'll see each other in person. And if the stars align, we'll get to do a live episode. Well, not live, broadcast live, but we'll do an episode in person, which mm-hmm. would be really fun.
Well, I guess we could, as long as there's good internet, I guess I could turn the phone on for a little Facebook Live at the same time.
Oh, maybe. Maybe. I'll have to put on my, presentable clothing
mm-hmm. instead of your editor uniform.
I can't just show up in the thing I normally wear in the cave.
So. Well, totally get it. Are you interested in a quote
for this show? Do you have one?
I actually do, from Jerome Stern, who writes, "The creation of character presents special problems for writers of fiction. The playwright or screenwriter can hope for arresting actors whose appearance, presence, mannerisms, and delivery will create memorable characters. As a writer, you have only your words on the page. You cannot even rely on illustration as 19th century writers often did. At the same time, there's nothing more important to your fiction than your characters." And that's so true.
Yeah.
I totally believe that plot matters as well. Like there's all these elements and you have to balance them out correctly. Mm-hmm. And characters is a huge part of that.
Yes. Yes. And as Mr. Stern says, we have some limitations. We have some great advantages in that we can reveal thoughts and feelings, mm-hmm. from within the characters. But yeah, it's a slight disadvantage to not have the visual mm-hmm. piece to go along with it. Or like he says, actors who can kind of fill in the blanks. So we really have to be clear with how we reveal who these people are to make them come alive on the page. Mm-hmm. Because if they're not authentic, if they're not three-dimensional, beings on the page, then we don't, it's harder to connect with them.
Right. And that's at the end of the day, that's what matters the most, is that connection with the characters and the reader, so that they have a vested interest in the story and will continue to turn the page. Because no matter how good a plot is, you know, and how exciting it is, or how good your writing is, if they don't care about the characters, they might stick with it for a while, but it's going to be hard for them to get through it. And they might just put it down and go do something else instead.
Yeah. Yeah. We wouldn't want that.
No. And we don't want that ever. So.
All right. Well, we have a submission today, which is kind of fun. It's called Let's Go Inwards. And the author is Jake. He says, a combination of new adult humor and science fiction, and it's a novel of 60,600 words. And we have the first five pages, which Clark is going to read for us.
Chapter 1, Let's Go on a Blind Date. William's date clung to her purse like a life preserver. His eyes slid around and landed on the coaster underneath his wrist. It had faded to a pathetic blue, and the details within the Roman columns of the logo had mostly dissolved. He covered it with his glass. Of course, it wasn't glass, just that fake hard plastic that dive bars and disabled people used. The cheap particle board table between them crumbled at the edges, like someone on a strict diet nibbling at the corners of a Hershey's bar. His knees bounced against the underside, and he stopped, worried that they would stick to the ancient chewing gum underneath. It wobbled, either in spite of or because of napkins folded over like gauze balancing two of the legs. But thank God for the coaster. The thick air amplified the noise and the sweat as it gushed from the dance floor, less of a nightclub and more of a zoo rainforest exhibit. If he focused hard enough on her silence, he could almost drown out the foghorn sound effect the DJ seemed to like so much. He couldn't think of more conversation starters, and she didn't seem too interested to present any. They had spoke for the last hour on topics and questions raised exclusively by him, and he waited to see if she would start one. It looked like a no. Either she could say something and act like she wanted to be here, or she could just leave. As an adult, the polite thing for her to do would have been to stand up, say, "I need to go study for finals. It was nice to meet you," and leave. But she sat there, like a prisoner of her own volition. He was an adult, too, and he could leave, but on some twisted, stubborn principle, he needed to go down with the ship. Besides, his roommates were somewhere else in here, and he would need a ride home. "Julie!" Another girl scrambled into the booth and slid her butt over the vinyl and into Julie's arms. "How are you, bitch?" she screamed over the sound of either thumpy, disordered music or a helicopter landing on the dance floor. "Ah, you. Who's your friend?" "We take poetry together." The friend materialized a smartphone from thin air. "William." He stuck out a hand to shake, but she held up her phone and her drink, half smiling, like she couldn't be bothered. "Where's Doug?" she asked, her face lit from the screen like a summer camp counselor telling ghost stories. "He's such a slut. Where that silly boy?" "Probably banging his way through the rush house." Julie swizzled her straw around, rolling her eyes in the same motion. "That's like a sorority thing, right?" William tried to jump in. Neither answered, a fly on their windshield at 120 miles per hour. Julie patted her friend on the shoulder and pointed into the distance. William leaned over the table and tried to see past the girls. He watched as Mick shuffled out of a crowd and approached the table, three shot glasses in one hand, absolutely nothing in the other. "Julie Babuli," he said. "Who's your friend?" "Kate," Kate said, straightening her chin and shooting out a hand to shake Mick's. He winked, and his smiling teeth flashed a tiny shimmer like an old Mentos commercial. "We'll shake hands after we down these bad boys." Mick placed the radioactive yellow shots on the table. "Sorry, bud, didn't grab one for you." They grabbed their drinks and held them in the air. "One, two, three!" Mick said, and on three, they all threw their heads back in unison. William just stared forward. Julie and Kate cleared their throats and grimaced. "Ah, so what's your name?" Kate asked, squeezing Mick's arm. "Guess," Mick said. "Terry? Ha, do I look like a Terry?" What the hell does that mean? William thought. "Ha, okay, Fred," she grinned, purposely guessing wrong. Oh, please. William wondered how this little game usually panned out. What cute little clues Mick eventually dropped. It's Mick, he said, reaching his hand out to Kate. Wait, Kate said, still clutching his hand. Isn't that a famous name? Like, isn't there a music dude or someone with that name? Mick Fleetwood, William all too happily interjected. One of the founders of Fleetwood Mac. That must be where it came from. There are no other famous Micks in music history. Not a single one. Hmm, Kate said. I'm pretty sure there is. I just can't think of it. William continued, trying to cut off Mick before he could answer. Well, Jumpin' Jack Flash, I can't think of any more. I wish I could. I'd enjoy that satisfaction, but I can't get none. I can't get no. Kate closed her eyes. The skin on her forehead tightened up as her teeth grew more and more visible, clenching in frustration. I can't think of it either, Julie said. I guess you can't always get what you want, William said. Oh, Mick Jagger, Rolling Stones. That's awesome. What a cool name, Kate said. Wait, how did you not know that? Julie asked William, punching him on the shoulder. I thought you said you loved music. Come on, bro. William closed his eyes and slouched forward. He rested his chin on the edge of the table, inches from his empty drink. He watched as a piece of ice melted and broke off from another. His jokes had flown over their heads like a fucking satellite. He likes music, and he's never heard of the Rolling Stones? Eh, this might be a dud there, Jules. No offense, Kate said. Hey, it's a new generation, ladies, Mick said, coming to William's defense. I mean, I just really like old music. I identify with it more than modern music. I'm kind of an old soul, and some people just like whatever's on pop radio, and there's nothing wrong with that, right, bud? William didn't know what to say. He just continued to stare into his drinks. How many conclusions can three people jump to in a span of 2 minutes? They began to carry on a new conversation about their majors and minors and hometowns and other assorted bullshit. He looked through the glass at the ice, at his new warped view of the bar. The lights and the people morphed into slimmer, upside-down versions of themselves as they passed by. A bead of condensation rolled down the side. It hesitated near the bottom, then dove into the coaster. Fingers wrapped around either side, and the glass began to levitate in the air as it pulled away from him. On the other side of the table, a blonde girl in a tight black polo placed the empty drink on a tray of empty glasses. Her wide eyes caught him and held them with a telepathic intensity. He wondered how long she had been near them, if she had heard their whole embarrassing conversation. Plenty of pretty girls came in here, but always a generic, commercialized, Target Home Goods catalog kind of average. Understandable pretty. She had a striking look, her face sharp, with the violent edges and worn confidence of a high fashion model. She leaned over the table and gathered the three empty shot glasses with one hand, never severing her eye contact with William. As soon as Mick noticed, he began to shift toward her, more than ready to cut his conversation with the other two girls. She placed the tray of drinks down, and with her palms flat on either side, stretched her neck out and hovered her head over the center of the table. She stopped just a few inches shy of William, her mouth next to his ear, and spoke. I got it, she said, with a smile. She pushed herself back, grabbed the tray, and walked away. More than anything, he wanted to chase her down and thank her, hug her, propose to her. But he sat there, paralyzed. Who that? Mick asked the girls. I think that's Hank's girlfriend, Anna. I'll go find out. Mick sprang from the table and darted off toward her. Okay, come back, Kate squealed. Julie smiled and slapped her on the arm. Easy, horn dog. I'm going to go to the bathroom, William told the girls. Okay, have fun, Julie answered without looking up from Kate's phone as they cycled through pictures of themselves posing on a beach that looked straight off a Windows desktop wallpaper. He shuffled out of his seat. Everyone knew he wouldn't be back. The blood hath caked over, William thought about the phrase. He glanced down to the metal plumbing of the urinal where the porcelain met the pipe. Was this blood mixed with sugar, eggs thrown into an oven and served 30 minutes later at a birthday party? Nosebleed? Maybe someone earned a punch in the face, and before washing up in the sink, they relieved themselves first. Someone with priorities, out of order, someone drunk. Not washing hands out of spite is a new one, though. William couldn't imagine spreading any more bacteria within the seething, pulsing belly of the beast. He slogged his way back through the bar, nightclub, lounge, venue, build a douchebag workshop. William loathed coming here for the second time in 1 month. At this kind of bar, Bottle service meant reserving the two couches without vomit stains, sitting behind a velvet rope and saying, "Hey, ladies, we may be some celebrities you've never heard of. Come talk to us just in case." A place where the drinking age had just been raised to 19, a place where the quote-unquote music blared so loud one had to scream into the bartender's ear from just inches away in order to order a whiskey and Coke. "What kind of whiskey?" she'd scream back.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
That was a great reading. I love your voices.
Yeah, you know, try something out a little different once in a while. I never know where they're going to come from, so we just see who ends up being who.
Awesome, which is great because we're talking about characters today, and we have some really, how shall we say, extreme characters in our story today. I really, you know, it's funny because there's so many great descriptions or, you know, like little lines and things in here. And we have this interesting, very observant character whose eyes were seeing everything through. Mm-hmm. So that's obviously that's William. And he has some of the lines are just
brilliant. I know. Yeah. Yeah. He's definitely a guy who's very good on his wit. Fast on his feet and has a lot of deep-rooted opinions on every single thing about life and how it should operate and how disappointed he is that the people around him aren't operating the right way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we get a lot of his worldview in just these few pages. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things we wanted to talk about today is revealing character. And so I thought we'd just go through and kind of talk about the different ways that we find out about William in this, you know, in this opening, because we have, as you said, we have his thoughts about everything and anything. You know, he has an opinion about the glasses. He has an opinion about the table, and so, you know, so the place he's at, he's not thrilled to be there, obviously not enjoying that very much.
Not the music, not the company. Yeah, he's kind of a little bitter.
Yeah, with the exception of the bartender / serving person, he's pretty done with everybody.
Yeah, and it's fun to see all of this come out in what's done here in the pages that we read.
Right, and so we have his reactions to people, like when he mentions, what was that? It was such a great line about how could three people miss. Okay, I'm going to find it because I want to make sure I don't want to mess it up. It was so good.
Wait, where after he bombs on his joke?
Yeah, the Mick Jagger stuff. How could three people? I don't know why I can't find this, but I'll keep looking. Do you want to say, you want to mention something else that you found?
Yeah. Yeah, so one of the things, and I guess I want to mention this one real fast so that we can, so I don't forget it. But right at the very beginning, we have this line in here. Of course, it wasn't glass, just that fake hard plastic that dive bars and disabled people used. Mm-hmm. And that's a real shot across the bow in our current PC and definitely Facebook protest world. And so, like, if you're going, and this is a comedy, and comedy can get away with doing a lot of different types of jokes, but like, it could easily turn someone off right in that first little line. Mm-hmm. And the funny thing is, with this particular line, once I got to the end of it, like, I don't really feel like that's actually something that William would say, because I had suggested in here, you know, could kind of dodge that. And this is something you definitely want to do. Like, it's one thing for a character to think something and have opinions, but if the narrator comes across as the having those types of things, it can be a little dodgy mm-hmm. on what people are going to come away with and think about it. So I made the suggestion to dodge that by having it be an awkward joke that William tries on his date, because you can see that there's a lot of stuff that's not working on this date already mm-hmm. or has not worked. But when I got to the end of it, I was like, I don't know. I don't think that William would do that joke. He's higher thinking than that. So.
Yeah. I agree. I agree both that it's tricky territory. Mm-hmm. You want to be very mindful about that. And also that it doesn't seem to fit with William.
Right.
But I did find that line.
Found it?
Yes.
Okay, good.
How many conclusions can three people jump to in the span of 2 minutes?
Yeah.
And because he's doing so, like, this is really clever the way he has brought in all of, you know, the Rolling Stones, either titles or little, you know, playing around
lyrics
with
lines. Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And so it's really clever, like I said, and nobody gets it. And he's rightly, I think, feeling a bit annoyed about that.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, for sure. And, you know, Mick coming to his rescue there by saying things like, I'm just an old soul who likes old music type of stuff. But clearly, you know, not, because no one's getting it. And I think that that this would be a good place to show character for the girls too, because I can certainly hear one of them saying, oh yeah, because they want to impress Mick.
Yeah.
And so saying something like, oh yeah, I totally am the same way. I'm such a huge Rolling Stones fan, you know, just to kind of cement that they're into Mick only through what they're seeing right at that moment, and will say whatever to make them feel that way, because clearly they wouldn't, because they didn't get the joke. So, so you can use lines like that to show other people's character, but we're certainly seeing William
right.
and how he is, and his personality is coming out in all the things that he says, but then reinforces with the stuff that he's not saying or that's going through his mind.
Right. And within this, there also is what he's not doing,
mm-hmm.
right? Because he doesn't try to jump in and engage at that point. He doesn't say anything. He doesn't do anything. I found myself thinking, oh man, you know, under some circumstances, you might just like want to hit somebody who had behaved that way. I wouldn't recommend it. But I could definitely understand the urge. And so what I was thinking was that, you know, he doesn't do anything, though, in that moment.
No.
Except he goes inward, which is great, a great play on the title and also what happens later on in the story, based on what we know from the log line that we have. And so I think, obviously, what characters do and then what they don't do. And as you said, what they say and what they don't say are all things that are revealing of character. And I wanted to go down to where he's having the harsh judgment of Julie.
Mm-hmm.
Is it Julie or Julie? He has this harsh judgment of her. Like, you know, he had been trying all night to talk with her and
right.
she hadn't been holding up her end of it. She obviously wasn't interested. Heck, he wasn't really that interested too. But could she just be the adult and say, oh, I have to go or something like that? So he's kind of, you know, having an internal dig at her,
mm-hmm.
you know, as the adult, as an adult, the polite thing for her to do would be to go. But
yeah.
she sat there like a prisoner of her own volition. And then he notes, well, he's an adult too, and he could leave, but he has this twisted, stubborn principle that he needs to go down with the ship. And besides, he needs a ride home. So
yeah.
So he's stuck there. But he doesn't make the leap. then that Julie might be in the same boat, so to speak.
Right. Yeah, because clearly she's not, right? I mean, like, you know, in his mind, yeah, she's being rude and not being an adult about this and just, you know, not living up to the social agreement here for this date. And by golly, he's going to stay and see it through to the bitter end, even if she can't.
Right. Right. And then we have, you know, we have Julie's friend, Kate, who shows up, right? And she is, I think there's a certain kind of, I'm going to reveal something about my worldview here. There's a certain kind of person who calls their friends bitch. I think that, like, it's not every person, and it's certainly not every relationship where you do that. And so that's a really interesting reveal through dialogue, yeah, that we get there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You see this person real clear, real fast.
Yes.
So.
And you don't like her very much. Uh-uh. I should only speak for myself. I found Kate to be rather unpleasant. Mm-hmm. I don't think I'd hang out with her.
Yeah. But the interesting thing here, and again, more revealing of William's character, is even after Kate shows up, mm-hmm, he's trying, and Mick, yeah, shows up, and he's still trying, but because and I think we can't assume what it is that he wants. And so, like, we know that he wants something, though. Like, what's being unsaid here is that there is something he wants from this interaction. Mm-hmm. We don't know what it is, and that's never becomes particularly clear. If it's just because of what he said before, you know, and it's like this social agreement deal and he's going to stick it out, or if he just is feeling, you know, maybe he does honestly want to be part of the group, and that's his wall that he throws up, is by saying that he's so much ahead of them, like, you know, smarter than they are, and he's follows the social rules and he does the right things, you know, and so he throws that wall up. But what he really wants is, if they would just pay attention to him and bring him in on the party.
Yeah. Yeah. Just acknowledge, hey, I'm here.
Yeah.
So that's one, you know, like, we're getting character, a little bit about his character. It's not that Mick and Kate and Julie are reliable necessarily, or people whose opinions about other people we would necessarily rely on, but we have three people pretty consistently here in this setting not paying attention to him. So their, yeah, reaction to him says something about them, but it also says something about William. And we don't, yeah, know exactly maybe what that is yet. Maybe he's socially awkward. Maybe he's posh and what's the word I'm looking for? Patronizing, or mm-hmm, I don't know why I can't think of the word, but condescending, or, mm-hmm, you know, maybe he's not fun to hang out with, even though his jokes are good.
Right. And again, going back to our quote, mm-hmm, like, yeah, if you did this on the screen, you would see how he dresses. You could see his mannerisms. You could hear his inflection. Granted, you know, I added inflection to this, but mm-hmm, in my own interpretation of it, not necessarily of the true interpretation of what it is. And like, you would get that in a film. And so you've got to work really hard to make sure that those things are coming across the right way. And I think that's probably the one thing that we are missing in here is understanding what it is that's keeping these other people away from William and why that interaction is not taking place.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And of course, the one person who does react to him or react favorably to him is the server / yeah, bartender person. And I think she's going to end up being the character called Hannah. Mm-hmm. We don't know that right here in this scene. But she is, you know, she reacts favorably. She wants to let him know, hey, I got your joke. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, and it was funny. And she makes a point. I mean, that's really, she doesn't just wink at him from a distance. She gets really close to him and says, I got it. So yeah. That's, you know, that's another reaction that reveals something. Well, William's not a, you know, he's not a total loser or whatever. Like somebody there in that space is responding to him in a positive way.
Yeah. And again, you know, we always talk about mystery, and you certainly don't need to reveal everything about your character in one chapter, you know, so having that, like, what's up with William is a good question. Because in the reading through here, you can get the impression that that he knows who Mick is, and that if he's not roommates, at least they're close enough that they know who each other are. Mm-hmm. And why doesn't Mick bring him a drink? Mm-hmm. Like, why, you know, like, if they're friends, like, why doesn't he do that? Is William the friend who never pays his own way? Like, you know, like, he never picks up the check. He never buys the drinks for someone else and just takes from people. We all have, I think in our life, we've all had that friend before who likes to eat the pizza but never pay for it. And, you know, and so maybe that's what it is. But those kinds of things could be revealed later on. And because that's a big question, you know, like if I was hanging out with friends or something, or if I was going to be invading someone else's space like that and bringing drinks over to the girls, I would certainly have brought one over for him as well. So, and it's another very telling moment in here on character and what is wrong with William.
Yeah. So. Yeah, it's so funny because my feelings about William keep kind of morphing and changing as we go, oh yeah, poor William, those jerks. And so, you know, which tells you there's some good stuff going on in here where we're finding, you're not going to get a complete picture of your character in the first scene. And although it's important to have a characteristic moment in the beginning so that we can get a picture or the essence of the character before the big thing happens that tips their world upside down, we don't have to know him 100%, as you say, in the beginning. And it's sort of like when you're getting to know someone, you know, when you meet someone, you get to know them over time. There are, I'm sure, circumstances where you start talking and then you reveal everything within a short period of time. But for the most part, when we meet people, we find out some, you know, oh, what do you do? Oh, where are you from? You know, those kinds of questions. And although we want to dig deeper than that for revealing character, understanding that it's that we're at that level with William right now, meaning we've only just met him, so we only have a few pieces of the puzzle to his full character.
Yeah we do. And but we still get a lot of view of what he thinks, which is really good, of what he thinks of himself and that. And I think that is some telling in and of itself. So
yeah,
there's a lot of fun in here. And I think this is a great one to take a look at again, you know, if you have questions about while you're working on a character and how to expose different things, is take a look through this submission, because there's really great stuff at work here where, you know, between dialogue, no dialogue, inner thoughts, and then the actions of people and how they're responding to others in the room. Like it's a lot of character development in here going on.
Yeah. And I wanted to point out one more before I get into a couple of picky things that I wanted to share. And it's the moment when the person we think is Hannah, the bartender / server, when she comes to the table and she... you know, says, I got it. I got your joke. And then he has this urge, really strong urge, to go after her. You know, like she's on my level. Uh-huh. Yes, she can see me. She gets me. And he doesn't do anything in that moment.
Nope.
And that's really telling. That he ends up going to the bathroom instead.
Yeah, he gets up and walks the other way. So, yeah. And, you know, and this is another good example, because not only, because he could have just sat there and Mick could have stayed there talking with him, but we also have another clear character description here, because Mick is acting. He goes after the girl and William doesn't. So that's a good foil moment there, where we can see some comparison and contrasting taking place between the two characters.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I just want to jot that down.
So, I've got one picky thing here that I'll toss out.
Okay.
So dear listener, when you're out there going through this and taking a look at it, you're going to come across these asterisks here towards the very end that actually break between the part where William walks away and the part where he's in the bathroom. And an asterisk like this should be signifying a visual cue for the reader that something has changed, usually point of view, time, or place. But it doesn't seem to take – that does not seem to be happening here. And so that's something you don't have to have in there. You can just go to the next place. Like, you don't have to even put transition between that. It can still be in the same chapter and right there and ready to go. So it's just because it kind of confused me, because I was, you know, and then kind of even reading into it, William loathed coming here for the second time in 1 month. So I didn't know if William's back and we just are back and now we're in the bathroom, like at another time, or it's the same night. And so I don't know, because we don't have any more of the book. But at any rate, if it's not, if it's just, if you're trying to do it because you didn't know how to transition between it, you don't have to do it that way. That's a confusing way to do it.
Yeah, I found the transition a little, I wasn't sure, where we were going, what we were doing. I mean, obviously, after, you know, getting down into it, I realized that we're in the restroom for a bit there. But then he's back at the bar. And so I'm not sure exactly how that, because we don't see him walking. Walking back through the bar, leaving the bathroom. So we don't know if he's like sitting at the bar thinking about that while he's waiting for the bartender to come say, what kind of whiskey?
Right. And that's, what is his name? Sorry, Joshua Crowther, who is, he's an author of comic books. And we had him on the Book Editor Show once, and we talked about editing for comics. And this is one of the things that he was talking about, you know, is that you can have these, what they're, you know, it's almost a incorrect jump, where, you know, you have the character drawn in one position and then in the next scene, all of a sudden they're like across the room and there's no transition between it. And so writing needs that as well. We have to have some sort of transition between things so we can reestablish where we're at and it doesn't feel like we're jumping all over the place.
Right.
That's just for the reader's ability to stick with where the story's at and not get confused.
Yeah, because you don't want people to have to reread. Like, wait a minute, where is he? What is he? Yeah, you never want that. That's never good. And so making that as smooth as possible so you're not breaking. You want to, obviously, what am I saying? Blah, blah, blah. What I want to say is the transition needs to be clear but also smooth.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, obviously you have to move from one place to another, but just if there's a way to make that really clear and then orient the reader where they are in time and space when they land.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because we don't have to follow William walking to the bathroom and going to the bathroom and moving to the sink to wash his hands. He's left the seat to go to the bathroom. He can be in the bathroom washing his hands. Like, that's clear, but we have to reestablish by saying, you know, by an action that's taking place there with interacting with the location. Mm-hmm. So that was my picky thing.
Okay.
That's all I had.
All right. Well, I have a couple of picky things that I wanted to mention. And one is that there are a lot of similes in here and they're good ones. Don't get me wrong. I like them. I like that William's date clung to her purse like a life preserver. I like that the The cheap particle board table between them crumbled at the edges like someone on a strict diet nibbling at the corners of a Hershey bar. There's some really great images in here, and we even have some metaphors, less of a nightclub, more of a zoo rainforest exhibit. The problem is that we have a lot of them all together, and that with figurative language of this kind, you want to, less is more. And so I would pick my very, very favorite one and use just one in the scene, unless it's something like it's almost a tick that the character is doing and he's saying them out loud or something mm-hmm. like that. But having too many of those will pull the reader, or can, or it's possible to distract the reader a bit. Even if you love them, like you mentioned this, he slogged his way back through. Oh, he does go back through. I missed that. caught me. Okay, so I missed that. Okay, so he did slog his way back through the bar, nightclub, lounge, venue, build a douchebag workshop.
Which the best line of the whole
thing. It is priceless. Uh-huh. It is priceless. So I think I might keep that one, though there are some other good ones that compete with it. But just be mindful of that you have some really colorful language and it's fun and revealing, but we don't want to go do too much that it becomes distracting. And then my other picky point is that there are some misplaced modifiers and places where a pronoun grammatically refers to something other than the author's intent. So we have, for example, the thick air amplified the noise and sweat as it gushed from the dance floor. So there it kind of sounds like the sweat is gushing from the dance floor, which I don't think is what we mean. I think we mean the noise is. Mm-hmm. Or the thick air, but we want to make that clear in those kinds of things, and then put the put the thing, the modifier should be right next to what it's modifying, or otherwise be really clear. And there were a few other small examples like that in here that you just want to be mindful of. But that's it for my picky things.
That wasn't too bad, so.
Hopefully not.
So.
But I do have an editorial mission.
Awesome. I love editorial missions.
It's not picky at all. So when you revise your scenes, look for all the ways that you have already revealed character. So what are your characters doing, saying, thinking? How are they reacting? How are people reacting to them? And be sure that you have revealed your character's essence in all of those things, rather than presenting, for example, what they look like, which, though important and one way of revealing character, is only one way to reveal character. So if you don't feel like you've captured the essence of your character in the way that you've revealed him or her at that point in the story that should be done, then add some more. Find, look at the other options you have to reveal who they are in that moment. And a special reminder that you can go to writership.com/episodes to sign up and get the editorial missions delivered right to your inbox, which is a great solution if you're on the go when you listen to the podcast.
And the Writership Podcast is brought to you by the good folks at the Author Marketing Club, which you can find at www.authormarketingclub.com. Don't forget, when you become a premium member today, you'll also gain access to the new and improved Amazon Reviewer Grabber tool.
Okay. And if you enjoyed the show, please leave us a rating and review on iTunes or Stitcher. If you want to have your 5 pages reviewed, please visit www.writership.com/submissions. Be sure to check out the Book Editor Show, which Clark hosts with Peter Turley. And this being episode 99, if you have burning questions you would like Clark and I to answer in episode 100, please visit writership.com/ask. That is it for episode 99. We'll see you next time on the Writership Podcast.
Ready for Leslie and Clark to help you find the treasure in your manuscript? Submit your pages to writership.org/podcast.